Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn and Anna Mateo. Later, we will present our series on America's national parks. But first, insect experts say people should remain calm about the large insect being called the murder hornet. The Asian giant hornets found in Washington state rarely kill humans. But they do kill whole hives of honeybees, which are already at risk. Many bug experts told the Associated Press that what they call hornet hype reminds them of the 1970s public scare of Africanized honeybees. The insects, popularly called killer bees, started moving north from South America. These more aggressive bees did make it up to Texas and the American Southwest. While the bees do kill people in rare situations, they did not live up to their fearsome name. This time, it is hornets with a frightening-sounding name. Bug experts want that name to be dropped. They are not murder hornets. They are just hornets, said Washington Agriculture Department entomologist Chris Looney. He is working on the state's search for these large hornets. Experts said two dead Asian giant hornets were found in Washington last December. A single live nest was found in Canada and destroyed last September. No live hornets have been seen so far this year. Looney has a message for Americans. These hornets are not coming to get you. The number of people who are stung and have to seek medical attention is incredibly small, he said. Experts said this hornet is especially big, 5 centimeters long, so it does carry more and stronger poisonous substance. But University of Illinois entomologist May Barenbaum said, people are afraid of the wrong thing. The scariest insects out there are mosquitoes. People don't think twice about them. If anyone's a murder insect, it would be a mosquito. The World Health Organization says mosquitoes are responsible for millions of deaths each year worldwide. People die from malaria, dengue fever, and other diseases mosquitoes carry. In the United States, hornet, wasp, and bee stings kill 62 people a year on average. That information comes from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. In Japan, Korea, and China, people have coexisted with this hornet for thousands of years, said Doug Yanega. He is a scientist at the University of California, Riverside Entomology Research Museum. But bug experts across the country are getting worried calls from people who wrongly think they saw the Asian hornet. This is 99% media hype, and frankly, I'm getting tired of it, said University of Delaware entomologist Doug Tallamy. Murder hornet, please. Bee expert Jerry Bromenschenk said in an email, one nest, One individual hornet, hopefully, does not make an invasion. Do we want this hornet? Surely not. But the media hype is turbocharged. For bees and the people who depend on them for a living, Asian giant hornets could be yet another big problem. But it is not a big problem yet.
How do you make sure that someone sick with the coronavirus stays home? As the United States begins reopening its economy, state officials are wondering whether technology being used to enforce house arrest orders could be used on coronavirus carriers. High-tech tools have been used in some cases to follow confirmed carriers over the past few weeks. But more widespread use has been held back by a larger legal question. Can officials require electronic observation without a court order or evidence of criminal activity? This question has been raised in places like Hawaii, notes Ronald Kochi, president of the Hawaii State Senate. His state considered the use of high-tech tools to enforce stay-at-home orders given to arriving air travelers. One idea was to require confirmed carriers to wear GPS-enabled devices around their arms. The other was to require those infected to equip their smartphones with tracking apps, software programs able to report their movements. Kochi said Hawaiian officials were concerned that many travelers were violating the state's 14-day quarantine order. But he said that the plan for using such technology to follow incoming travelers was halted after Hawaii's top law enforcement official raised concerns. America is America, Kochi told the Reuters news agency, noting individual rights and freedoms in the country. Hawaii's COVID-19 Joint Information Center released a statement to the Office of the State's Attorney General. It reads, "The ideas being evaluated for tracking those under mandatory quarantine in response to the COVID-19 pandemic are right now just that, ideas." Similar ideas have already been executed in a few other states. 7 people who broke quarantine rules in Louisville, Kentucky, were court-ordered to wear GPS tracking devices, notes Amy Hess, the city's chief of public services. She told Reuters that while she had little interest in the devices, state law requires the enforcement of stay-at-home orders to protect public health. "We don't want to take away people's freedoms, but at the same time, we have a pandemic," she said. Industry officials said they had taken calls from state and local governments about repurposing their high-tech tools for quarantine enforcement. They would not identify the possible buyers. Chris Keaton works for eCell, a company based in Arkansas. Keaton told Reuters he had recently spoken with a state agency that wanted to make changes to his detainee tracking smartphone app for quarantine enforcement. He said the changes the agency requested affected the software's appearance, but not what it does. The industry has two main ways for following offenders. One is through the traditional ankle bracelet. The device is connected to the bottom of a person's leg, so their movements can be observed with GPS technology. The other is through a smartphone app. It can be used either in combination with facial or voice recognition technology or connected through Bluetooth to a device placed around the end of the arm. One version of the app and wristband solution is already being used in Hong Kong to enforce quarantines on incoming travelers. I'm Brian Lin.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. For millions of people around the world, the coronavirus pandemic has changed many daytime activities. For some, it also has affected their sleep. Fears of loss, isolation, and sadness come out during sleep. Many say they awake feeling even more pressured and fearful. Experts say some pandemic dreams are about the fear of the unknown. Who is a threat? When will the pandemic end? Some dreams are about fearing for the safety of loved ones. And other dreams are about the loss of normal life. Mary Alice Matheson is a clergy person in Florida. She dreamed 500 people showed up for a funeral at her church and would not go home. Ashley Trevino is out of work in Texas because of the pandemic. After the first COVID death in her area, she dreamed that she and her girlfriend were injected with the coronavirus by government workers. In Pakistan, Roha Rafiq dreamed that she was one of only 100 people left on the planet not infected with COVID-19. The college professor said that in her dream, infected people were chasing her and the other uninfected people. They wanted to make the world the same for everyone. I think, Rafiq later wrote on Twitter, this anxiety has given me this dream. She is not alone. So many people are sharing their dreams that there is an online collection under the name I Dream of COVID on the social media website Twitter. Experts observe that in recorded history, humanity has rarely experienced collective dreaming on such a large scale in real time. Harvard University professor Deidre Barrett is studying COVID dreams worldwide. She has collected 6,000 dreams from about 2,400 people. Barrett says the flu pandemic of 1918 is probably the most comparable thing. But as far as she knows, no one has examples of dreams from that pandemic. Kathy Carruth, is a professor at Cornell University. COVID-19 dreams, she says, are similar to the dreams of Hiroshima survivors who worried about nuclear radiation. They are also similar to nightmares described by soldiers from the Vietnam War. Some dreams are about everyday activities that we can no longer do, seeing friends, attending a party, or going to the movies. However, that changes greatly for healthcare workers on the front lines of the pandemic. Professor Barrett says she has found a common theme in their dreams. They are responsible for saving a person's life, but they are failing, and the person is about to die. When healthcare workers dream about their child or parent getting the virus, Barrett explains, it often does not stop there. The next step is finding out that they gave the virus to their loved one. Barrett says they are having nightmares that reenact the things they are experiencing. Dr. Lisa Medalli is a sleep expert at the University of Chicago. She advises that it is important for people to get good sleep during the pandemic. On the university's website, she gives these suggestions. Structure your daytime schedule. Commit to daily activities. Exercise, eat, and talk to family and friends at regular times. This will build structure to your days. Get alone time each day. Medalli suggests at least 1 hour of alone time each day. This may be hard, but she reminds us that spending time alone and doing something we enjoy is important. Create a peaceful sleep environment. Make sure your bedroom environment is peaceful. Keep the room cool, dark, and quiet. Limit the amount of clutter and noise in your bedroom. Create a sleep schedule and limit daytime sleep. Get the same amount of sleep each night. Most adults need 7 to 8 hours a night. And once you decide on your bedtime, stick to it. Also, daytime sleep should be less than 30 minutes and before 2 p.m. Limit screen time at night. Turn off your electronic devices 1 hour before bedtime. Do not bring your devices into your bedroom. This way, you will not look at COVID-19 updates during the night. Try breathing exercises. Use slow, deep breaths to fall asleep or to return to sleep. Breathe in slowly through your nose for 3 seconds. Then breathe out slowly through your mouth for 3 seconds. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
Woodrow Wilson, America's 28th president, established the National Park Service in 1916 to protect the wild and wonderful landscapes in the United States. But it is an earlier leader who is considered the father of America's national parks. In 1906, Theodore Roosevelt, America's 26th president, signed the American Antiquities Act. The law permitted him and future presidents to take immediate action to protect important cultural or natural resources. The Antiquities Act led to the creation of many of the 413 sites within the National Park Service today.
No president has played a bigger role in protecting the country's natural and cultural resources than Theodore Roosevelt. During his time in office, he established 5 new national parks and 18 national monuments. In all, he protected over 93 million hectares of public land. He became known as the conservationist president. Roosevelt's concern for the land and environment came from the time he spent in the Dakota Territory, beginning in the 1880s. The area where he traveled is now the state of North Dakota. Today, you will find a national park there named in his honor. The park protects badlands, wildlife, scenic views, as well as 2 ranches where Roosevelt himself once lived. Welcome to Theodore Roosevelt National Park.
Theodore Roosevelt came to Dakota Territory in September 1883. He was a young married man from New York, where his political career was just beginning. He came to Dakota in hopes of hunting huge animals called bison. He also had a great interest in the Western frontier lifestyle. Roosevelt soon developed an interest in raising cattle. Cattle ranching in Dakota was a big business in the 1880s. Cattle fed on the land's healthful grasses. He and a partner entered the business. Roosevelt invested $14,000 to build the Maltese Cross Ranch. Roosevelt returned to New York while workers constructed the ranch. He resumed his political duties in Albany, the state capital. But in early 1884, he experienced 2 great personal losses. His mother and wife died of illnesses on the same day, February 14th. Roosevelt described the pain and loss in his diary with only 1 sentence: "The light has gone out of my life."
Roosevelt again headed west in the summer of 1884. He sought to escape the reminders of his recent losses. He arrived at his newly built Maltese Cross Ranch. He also decided to build a second ranch in a quieter, more remote area. He called that ranch Elkhorn. Roosevelt traveled between New York and Dakota, working both as a state lawmaker and a cattle rancher. In late 1884, he helped form an organization in Dakota to help protect ranchers' rights. In 1885, Roosevelt published his first book about his experiences as a rancher and hunter. In it, he predicted that the cattle industry of the Dakota Badlands was not sustainable. In other words, it would not last. Roosevelt was right. Severe weather struck the area in 1886 and 1887. In the winter, a terrible freeze killed many cattle. The animals that survived the cold soon starved. Roosevelt himself lost over half of his cattle. He decided to get out of the business. The experience, however, shaped Roosevelt's beliefs about the need for conservation in America. Those beliefs, in turn, helped shape his policies as president.
Visitors to Theodore Roosevelt National Park can experience the Badlands just as Roosevelt did hundreds of years ago. They can also visit the Maltese Cross Cabin, as well as the Elkhorn Ranch area. The park has three main areas: the South Unit, the North Unit, and the Elkhorn Ranch Unit. In the South Unit, visitors can drive along the Scenic Loop Road. It offers many places to see wildlife and the surrounding Badlands. Badlands are very dry places with little vegetation. Wind and water shape Badlands mainly through erosion. The process leaves behind high, flat-topped hills of clay and other soft rock. Many visitors stop to look at Painted Canyon. It gets its name from the colorful exposed rocks there. Trails near the canyon offer visitors a chance to see animals, from the huge American bison to small black-tailed prairie dogs. These animals are not really dogs, they are rodents. Roosevelt described prairie dogs as the most noisy and inquisitive animals imaginable.
The North Unit also offers several hiking trails. Some paths are short and easy. Others may take 2 days to complete. The Achenbach Trail is a 28-kilometer-long path. It crosses the Little Missouri River and takes visitors into the heart of the Theodore Roosevelt Wilderness. The third area of the park is the Elkhorn Ranch Unit. This is what Roosevelt described as his home ranch. He wrote of the ranch in this way: "My home ranch house stands on the river brink. From the low, long veranda, shaded by leafy cottonwoods, one looks across sandbars and shallows to a strip of meadowland, behind which rises a line of sheer cliffs and grassy plateaus."
Today, the Elkhorn Cabin itself no longer stands. Visitors will find only stone rocks where the cabin once was. The area that surrounds Elkhorn, however, is among the most beautiful, wild, and quiet places in the Badlands of North Dakota. It is this peace and beauty that appealed to Roosevelt after the deaths of his mother and wife. But the Dakota Badlands did more than just help Roosevelt overcome his pain. They helped shape the kind of president he would later become. In the words of Roosevelt himself, "I would not have been president had it not been for my experience in North Dakota." I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm John Russell.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.